Hi, everyone. Glad to be here. And as Dave mentioned, I'm going to give you this introduction and hopefully teeing up what the other speakers, already good speakers, highly knowledgeable in the topics they're going to talk about. I'm going to just give you this introduction of surface water and the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Now, you heard Dave mention some acronyms. I'm going to repeat them. SGMA is the Groundwater Sustainability Act, and that is requires the basin to produce a Groundwater Sustainability Plan, or GSP. So you'll hear those, SGMA and GSP, a lot in this, from me, definitely, and some of the other speakers. So why are we even considering surface water in a groundwater management plan? Because that's what the GSP is. It's a groundwater management plan. The short answer is that because surface water and groundwater are all part of the water cycle. And this kind of cartoon here shows how if there's rainfall, and they're just going to go through this water cycle, run through it, and to give you a little bit more detail. So when it starts raining here on the land, on the ground surface, some of it is going to infiltrate a certain percent, say 10%, for example. Then 90% moves on. Some of it might evaporate directly. It might be taken up by floods and evapotranspirated. It could run off, which obviously in this area there's quite a lot of runoff happens as well. And that water that goes through this, that makes it through the soil zone, it makes it through the unsaturated zone, which is just above the water table, and then makes it all the way down to the actual water table. That is considered groundwater recharge. So what has to happen before it actually becomes recharged? Once it hits the groundwater system or the aquifers, it's going to flow from high elevation to low elevation. Groundwater is going to flow downward or upward. And so if in these steep V-shaped valleys, there's a lot of creeks at the bottom of them. And so the groundwater could flow into them. This is, and this is called, if the stream is gaining groundwater, it's called a gaining stream. So it's the groundwater is contributing to the flow of the stream. Further down the stream, conditions might change, and you might get surface water flowing out into groundwater, and now this is a losing stream. So depending on the groundwater elevations, you can have different things happening. And I'll be talking more about that. Some of the other speakers will be talking about it too. The runoff the portion that runs off can get intercepted by plants, and you get some losses. But whatever makes it down into the creek, well, that's, you know, contributes to the majority of the stream flow that you have in the creeks. Down at the creek, in the stream area, you can have reversals of flows from the groundwater to the stream if you, say, have a pumping well. And now, normally, without this well pumping, your groundwater level would be similar to this, for example. And here there's a case where this well is pumping and groundwater levels have gone down, and now on this side you're having losing, your stream is losing. So this is really what SGMA is about the impacts that we have on it when we extract groundwater from a basin, and it's concerned with what happens to the stream. I'll give you some more examples of this as well coming up. So I'm sure you've heard this before, that about the six sustainability indicators that are part of SGMA. And these are, only two of them actually are related to surface water. The first one being depletion of interconnected surface waters, and I'm going to go in quite a bit of detail about what that means, but it's basically reduced stream flow because of pumping. And then a second one is kind of indirectly related to surface water, and that is if you lower groundwater levels some distance away from creeks, you could influence ponds and wetlands. And I'll go into that a little bit more as well, with some graphics to show you. And so all of this is in the SGMA regulations, and there's a series of slides here that gives you the section or where it is, but as part of SGMA, we're required to identify where these interconnected surface waters are with and groundwater. Where is this connection? Say, for example, in the Mid-County Basin, there are parts of that basin that are not connected to, the groundwater is not connected to surface water. And in this basin, there's a lot more connection, you'll see some of that when Chelsea speaks. We have to identify where groundwater-dependent ecosystems occur within the basin as well. And these may not be associated with creeks, these may be some other kind of plant habitat that's a distance away. So this is an extreme case of what could happen if you had a well pumping too much next to, This is a stream or a pond, and you have groundwater flowing from high to low elevations into the creek. It's a gaining creek. Now you come along and you put in some wells over here, and you draw the groundwater level down. Now the gradient is changed. Instead of going into the creek, it's now going away from the creek, and then it's a losing stream. You pump even more, and eventually you disconnect the groundwater from that pond or that stream. And so now it's not being fed by any groundwater, and the water in the pond is actually free-falling down through the unsaturated zone, and it's disconnected. And eventually you can dry this up. Now we don't have this case here. In the Central Valley, in fact, some of the basins there, they've been in this last condition for decades, and they plan to not address surface water. Its groundwater levels are 300, 400 feet lower than what they used to be. But in this basin, in some cases, they may be this happening, but as you'll find out, we have a lot to uncover on that part of the puzzle. So when we are identifying, when we're trying to identify how much surface water has been affected by groundwater extraction, these are the things that we need to identify. We need to identify the rate and volume. So how much of stream flow has been reduced because of groundwater use. Now you can appreciate there's lots of different things that affect flow in the stream, and I'll list those. And groundwater extraction is just one. It has to also have adverse impacts on beneficial users. So who are the users of this water? We have to identify it. A lot of you are some of those users, but they're also environmental users as well. And what's it in here? But the interests of those groups are here. And it may lead to undesirable results. an undesirable result would be loss of habitat for fish, for example. Also part of SGMA is that we have to establish some objectives, so or conditions called minimum thresholds. This is where the lowest kind of level that we want. If it's groundwater levels, we don't want groundwater levels to fall below this minimum threshold because it could have these undesirable results. And when we establish them, there's a lot of information we need to do it. We have to figure out the location, and this is all in the act. We have to figure out the location, quantity, timing, and depletions of interconnected surface water. If you really think about that, that's really difficult to do. And we also have to provide, and so often we can't directly measure that. There's not enough wells in the basin to be able to do that. So in lieu of that, we use a groundwater model, and we're busy developing in that. When Dave talked about that, we're busy developing some technical tools. The groundwater model is one of the ones that we're working on and trying to improve right now so that we can answer these questions, because we don't have much of the data that we would, in the ideal world, have. We have to provide a good description that this is a suitable tool, and we have to put that in the GSP. So I was alluding to monitoring surface water and groundwater. So we would really have to use that data where we have the connectedness, the connected groundwater and surface water. And we use those data to calculate these depletions. And it sounds easier theoretically that if you turn on a well, you measure the flow in the creek, and there's a reduction. Okay, well then you've got that connection. You can prove it. You can measure it. Mid-County, they had 15 years of data with specifically to monitor that. They could not, when they turned on and off the well, they saw no change in the groundwater, in the surface water flows. So already we know that's quite a difficult thing to do. And the reason is because what influences stream flow? Rainfall runoff, obviously that's where most of the flow in a creek comes from. And, you know, relatively the amount coming from groundwater is much less than what you get from precipitation. And then so things that influence runoff are what type of land use is there, what are the impervious surfaces like, how big is the watershed? Bigger watershed is going to have bigger runoff. Surface water management, what is happening with diversions, that affects definitely stream flow. We don't know where all the diversions are, then we do, you'll hear from Chelsea how they look at where groundwater is coming into the creeks, which stretches. You have to take all of this information into account. Bypass flows for fish, releases from reservoirs, these are very complex things that we have to consider when you're looking at how at what influences stream flow. Evapotranspiration and then lastly at the bottom there, the groundwater extraction. And really that is what SGMA focuses on. That's the thing that this agency can control. They can't really control any of these other things here, but maybe some of the surface water diversions, but a lot of the other things are natural processes. So this is something, when you hear the other speakers, just think about that we're supposed to focus just on the groundwater extraction. That's the only thing the agency can control. This is another example of lovely sketch that Sierra did. Actually, a lot of these are Sierra's slides, so thank you, Sierra. This is not subject to SGMA because there are no pumping wells in this area. Yeah, there's springs and there's a wetland form because of groundwater, but there's no groundwater pumping happening yet. So this is not something that we have to manage. But where there is pumping, whether it be deep municipal wells or shallow private wells or wells for agriculture, whatever it may be, for the quarries. If it's impacting usually it's going to be shallow groundwater. If this pumping is impacting it, that is subject to SGMA. And that's what we will be focusing on because this is a big basin. And so we're going to hone down on those areas where it's connected and when they're in, where there is pumping. So to a summary of all the considerations, I kind of am leading from my last comment into this. One, we have to figure out where the locations of interconnected water, surface water and groundwater. We have to look at areas impacted because of groundwater extraction, not because of some other, or something else, maybe land use. We may have a little bit be able to influence that a little bit. And then consider impacts of all the surface water users, the beneficial users, which are people and the environment, basically. There really aren't any others in this basin. So we need to have results that lead to reduced stream flow. If you can't measure that reduced stream flow, then that's hard to spend a lot of money trying to, you have to spend money if you want to rectify something with something measurable. And that's what the GSP is about. It's about measurable goals, and we have to prove to DWR, Department of Water Resources, that we are reaching those goals. Or impacts in groundwater levels in GDEs, although groundwater-dependent ecosystems. So that it might be away from a creek, because groundwater levels may be, shallow groundwater levels may be supporting those ecosystems, and if groundwater levels have now dropped, some of those ecosystems may be impacted. So these are all the considerations that we have to make, and the other speakers are gonna go into a little bit more detail about, not exactly this, but everything they talk about, all that information all funnels into our work to come up with the criteria that will be used to manage the basin in the end.
Okay, I'm gonna let you keep the mic. I'm gonna go to questions. And so Nick, if you can walk around if there's any sort of cards, I've got a couple right here that I'll speak very loudly to. Again, we may not always be able to get to all of them, but we'll try. So first question, if we don't have a recognized groundwater model, how can we be confident about measurements we're taking and what it means?
Yeah, very good question. You know, when the state put this all together and gave us guidelines, they realized that not everyone has the data, especially on this indicator. A lot of people have water level data for around their pumping wells, for example, but they haven't monitored streams ever. And so the state recognizes that we're not going to run out and put in 100 wells to figure this problem out. So they've given us 20 years to figure it out, and in 20 years you're supposed to reach sustainability. In the meantime, you do the best you can with the best available data. Yeah, they call it best available science. So the model is calibrated against groundwater levels. We have some levels. Hardly any of them are really close to the streams. So as part of the GSP, we will recognize that there are definite data gaps and that we need to add new monitoring wells. And you won't know after 1 year, you won't uncover everything. It takes years of monitoring, to 20 years even, like in mid-county, 15 years, 10 years. You know, every year that goes by, they learn a little bit more. But eventually you get there. And so we have to do the best we can with the information that we have by 2022 when the plan is due.
Okay, next question. What is the difference between Hortonian and Dunnian runoffs?
Who asked that question? Well, the difference is once starts with a D and the other one with a K. That's as much as I know. No, I'm joking. So the Dunnian one is it's running off on unsaturated. You see the groundwater levels up at the surface. And so there's much more runoff because it can't go into the ground because it's already saturated. Whereas the Hortonian is it's unsaturated below. So a little bit of it would, depending on the slope, if it's very sloped, it's not going to infiltrate much during the runoff process. I don't know, these scientists that come up with these things, they need to put, you know, they need to put their name somewhere. So Mr. Hortium discovered that one.
So when people, you'd be able to now go to any cocktail party and you are like that much ahead of everybody else, like, have I talked to you about Hortonium?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
All right, how can you determine in the modeling what the effect of subsurface geological composition has on the interconnectedness and responsivity of stream flow and groundwater? Is it related to well depths, extraction? How can you determine in the modeling what the effect is of the geological composition?
Well, the model is built based off the geologic composition. So there's a series of layers. Some of them are more permeable than others, and the model is built, its structure, it's given the information, this layer is more permeable than the next layer. And so based on how you set it up in those regards, it will interact a certain way. Once you start running it and compare the groundwater levels that the model's simulating compared to the actual measured groundwater levels, you might see, it's not working very well. So you have the dials of the model are to change some of those properties we just don't make those properties that there are geologic maps that say, you know, the Santa Margarita Formation is generally very sandy, and so and we have some test data that measures the permeability of that, so we can use that as a starting point. So it's really the structure informs the model, and the model then, which then will uncover some of the mysteries of the groundwater surface water interaction. So it's kind of there. It goes one way. It doesn't go the other way.
Okay, that's actually a good segue to this next question. And I'm going to put a sort of point of notice on this. I'm purposely trying to take your questions now. We have a block of time at the end for Q&A, but I'd rather sort of be front-loading questions as much as we can now. That might mean, proportionally, that when we get to the end of the evening, we're going to have less time for Q&A then, because while I'm doing it, you know, just cares. All right, under what circumstances can stream diversions be deemed to affect groundwater conditions? And would sigma apply in those circumstances, and if so, how? It's sort of turning sigma inside out.
I haven't thought that way yet myself. sigma is about how we use groundwater and how it impacts other things. If there was too much diversion happening, it affects fish first and then groundwater. But I think, like I mentioned, it's so small, that amount, that interaction, that you're going to see it in the creek going dry. The groundwater, I'm trying to visualize this.
Well, I mean, if I can wait, I also think this is probably essentially a good segue to John, because this gets into water rights and, you know, under groundwater. Well, John's going to talk about the different types of water rights and how certain water rights are appropriate, which have volumetric restrictions on them, versus groundwater rights, which don't really, except for now they do under sigma. So I think there's some items that you'll be talking about in groundwater rights that might get to. Sigma, as in the language of sigma, doesn't address this. There's nothing in sigma that really accommodates this condition. Doesn't mean it isn't happening, but sigma isn't written in that way, to be honest. But from a groundwater rights perspective, the water rights perspective, it might fall under the government.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to ask John to come on up, and I will.
Okay.